Hi, I'm Janet Shield Scott, and you're listening to What's Hot with Janet Shield Scott, a lifestyle talk guide with expert advice on beauty, wellness, fashion, real estate, entertainment,
and fun celebrity secrets.
Welcome to another informative podcast. Today's guest is psychologist Chris Violet. She's here to share her advice on mental awareness. And as we all know, we have a lot going on in our lives in which we may be able to use some of Chris's advice. But first, let's listen to our inspiring message for today. Accept people as they are, but place them where they belong. You are the CEO of your life. Hire, fire, and promote accordingly by Lessons Taught by Life. For more inspiring quotes, check out my Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, or YouTube. Sports fans, PassPros.com has it all. Baseball, basketball, hockey, and soccer. Get autographs and memorabilia direct from former pro athletes. Don't forget to check out the upcoming events page for special events near you. PassPros.com offers t-shirts, athletic gear, artwork, vintage cards. Log on to PassPros.com. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I am great.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you perfectly.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, and welcome, because you are what's hot today on Janet Shield Scott Podcast.
Hey, nothing wrong with being hot today.
Yes, you are majoring in psychology at an HBCU school, Spelman, and then you attended UCLA with your graduate program. And you've got 20 years experience, and you've created this space for healing.
Yeah, I am hopeful that, you know, especially for us, it's twofold. It's kind of, speaking to the idea that the space in and of itself, right, that a therapist cultivates, is mutual. And when you're actively engaged and really listening, that it provides a sense of healing. And then the other piece of that really that I was thinking of was, do we give ourselves the time? Do we give ourselves that space to process what we're experiencing, to feel all the things that life stressors and losses and day-to-day things are causing us to have to deal with, you know, or do we kind of swallow all those things and try to keep moving through, even though those things are eventually going to explode in our relationships and the way that we maybe address people or in the maybe the way that we kind of, you know, view ourselves, you know, so
yeah,
because I wanted both of those things to be emphasized.
Yes. Yeah. We're living in a society where everything has to be instant, and then everything's publicized on the internet, all the social media sites, the people, oh, I took a shower today. So much stuff on there that you could say, well, okay, I could do without some of this that's on there. A lot of it's negative, and then you do have some positivity with some of the posts that are on there. But tell us about the space for healing. Is that an online, because I know you have your website, but can anyone access Space for Healing?
Well, you can access it in the sense that, you know, website will get you to me. Mm-hmm. And the other way is through social media, which I was resistant to for many, many years for that very reason. I took a shower today. I'm like, okay, I don't, you know, but sometimes we almost resist things to our detriment. And I think that when you look at the people who are trying to use the platform to kind of encourage wellness, to promote wellness, to normalize mental health, you know, then for me, it makes sense. And so you can also kind of access What I try to do really is provide a combination of tools for daily living, along with kind of providing a different understanding around some of the things that we're experiencing, and really kind of speaking to our human experience in a way that leaves us feeling maybe a little less alone.
So this is on your Facebook page, you're saying?
On my Instagram is at Chris Violet or at Space for Healing _.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. But so then I couldn't book a session with you and I'm somewhere else in the country.
You know what? Only because you have to be board certified.
Oh, I see.
Where you provide service. So for example, I'm board certified in Texas and in California. So then anyone in California or Texas has access to me. But what I'm also trying to do is that's not the same for, you know, if I sit on panels, if I, you know, am a part of group discussions or group support, right? Or things of that nature, that's for anyone to access, which is another reason where social media, though initially avoidant, becomes important because there that barrier doesn't exist in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So that's good. So again, they can access that on your social media sites and your website.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get to that at the towards the end there. So October is Depression Awareness Month. Why do you think that October was chosen for Depression Awareness Month?
You know, Janet, I think seasonally, what you find is you're moving into kind of the holiday season. And I think that for some people with seasonal affective disorder, for example, the shift in the season can kind of bring on a sense of even deeper isolation, a sense of reflection that can be detrimental when we don't have anybody to kind of talk things out with. And so I'm not sure if that's the reason they chose the month.
Yeah, I can see that seasonally, not just with the holidays, but also with the weather, because as you some parts of the country that starts getting darker, there's not light. And I think even they say that Seattle, because it rains a lot, so it's cloudy, that they have depression there. I guess that's something to think about and possibly why they chose whoever.
Possibly why they chose. It's always interesting with these months too, because I think, you know, people suffering with depression, whether it's mild or really severe, are dealing with that experience more days than not of their lives, you know? So I'm glad that there's something to kind of highlight an awareness around it. But I also try to always be mindful of it doesn't start and stop when the month starts and stops, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was also reading the American Psychiatric Association saying that 1 to 6 people will suffer from depression at some time or another in their life, and that women are more likely to suffer from depression than men. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting. There is there is a hormonal component. So there are women who experience depressive symptoms right around the time of their menstrual cycle. And that's a newer diagnosis. So that's something that, you know, obviously would not impact men. But I also wonder sometimes about statistics in general. You know, are women more likely still to be seen, you know, or to seek out help, in which case they're more reflected in the statistics, versus maybe some men traditionally who might be more kind of hesitant around that idea. But in general, you know, I think all of us grapple with feeling a certain way that maybe we can't quite understand or can't quite place, and that can be very very frightening, you know, to kind of open up and discuss about. And what does that actually mean? And I just kind of need to get through this, you know, on my own, and kind of be on to the next, you know.
Yes. Yeah, and now speaking of men and women, in 2020, the Indianapolis Colts, the NFL team, and the Irsay family, which are the owners of the team, launched Kicking the Stigma with a board of clinicians and a board of doctors as well, which I thought was interesting. So they've been highlighting that a lot, which is mostly men that are in the NFL. Go ahead.
Yes. And, you know, to your point, really, the NBA, too, whether this past year or the last, they also started a program around mental health because more of their players were being honest about kind of pervasive anxiety they were experiencing and how it was impacting their ability to play. And so I think that you're right, you know, whether it's NFL, NBA or anywhere, I think the more that this is discussed. You know, Jana, my mom told me this is when I was a lot younger, but she told me that she could recall being young and people not discussing cancer, like at all. Like if somebody had cancer, when she was younger, it was very hush hush and family members would know, but they wouldn't necessarily talk about it. And it was very insulated and, you know, you kind of cared for your own, but that was it. And so I think about that in terms of mental health. Look at how differently we discuss cancer now, how open we are about it, the awareness campaigns, the walks to raise money, the, you know, and how significant that is in not just the money for our various, you know, modes of treatment, for example, but even the amount of support people feel like they have when something is normalized.
Yeah, you know, you're so right. I believe that the previous generations did not talk and discuss their mental pain and anguish they were going through. They just, as they say, suck it up and be some women say, put your big girl panties on, or man up or something. But you're right. The previous generations did not. Whereas now, people are just talking about everything.
Yeah. Yes. It, you know, it almost makes you feel like kind of the days of don't air your dirty laundry. You know, are over. And yet, because people call me to consult, to see, you know, if they want to engage in therapy, I'm still hearing the other side of that. Right. So whereas now two or three people call and they're like, oh, thank goodness. I, you know, finally found someone. I thought I was going to need a therapist to find a therapist. Like, ooh, this is, you know, but you'll still get the phone call where the person's like, okay, well, you said on your website that you also have worked with people that have this or that. And I mean, I'm not crazy. Like they'll really emphasize that. Or the idea of medication. It's like, okay, but it's not like that. You know, so on the one hand, yes, it's spoken about very openly, like the episodes of Insecure where she was going to see the therapist. But half the people are like, oh my God, yeah, therapy. Other half of people were like, ooh, that therapist's office was fly. Now, I don't think I really need to see anybody.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Yeah, to be honest with you, years ago, I was hit by a car as a pedestrian accident victim survivor. And I was in pain for years. And I mean, excruciating where I now have like a
minute
on my neck. So anyway, the thing about it was that I cried every single day.
Oh my God.
All day long. And finally this doctor said to me, he said, you need to see a psychiatrist. I said, no, I don't. I just need to get better. That's all.
Yeah.
And he slammed his fist on his desk and he said, I am going to set you up right now with an appointment with a psychiatrist and you are going. I don't care what you say. And I started seeing that psychiatrist. We ended up being good friends and I just found so much comfort in that. And I didn't realize that I really did need to see a psychiatrist. So some people just aren't aware of what they're going through. that it can help to see someone.
Right. Well, and what you're speaking to, you know, this sense of kind of like, I don't need to talk to a psychiatrist. I just need to not be in pain. The pain is causing me to be upset. Therefore, I'm crying. Right. When you think about, I like to look at therapy as more of kind of restoring a sense of balance. And so sometimes when something occurs, you know, like a traumatic incident, like what you experienced, the sense of balance is gone. You're grieving, your mobility, right? Adjusting around kind of constant chronic pain, just being startled still about what actually occurred, you know, for you.
And I had to have a home attendant for 8 hours a day. So like that, yes.
That would leave anyone depressed. And it's funny, I was talking with somebody, I was like, you know, it's interesting. If your friend said, "Ooh, I've been working out with this physical trainer girl. Look at my abs," or something like that, right? You'd be like, "Oh, let me know how it goes. Maybe I'll join you for a session or two." But it's like in every other realm of our lives, getting support. If we go to talk to the pastor or our spiritual advisor, right? Every other aspect of our lives, getting support is just seen as kind of smart. We don't necessarily still view mental health in that same way. It's almost like we have to be in this just intense kind of crisis or distress before we'll consider it, versus just kind of more of a maintenance part of our wellness.
All right. So what are the signs of depression that you think that people should look for in their friends and loved ones?
Now, you know, this is very interesting, Janet, because I think that depression looks so differently than we kind of initially think. We initially think we're going to see a person kind of crying all the time, all over the place, you know, low energy, da da da. And it really, Janet, you might find that your best friend, right, who's smiling and laughing and seems very active, but as soon as they get home, they fall apart. You know, and so the amount of energy that it takes to kind of maintain showing up in that way makes everything far worse for them. So sometimes it's really important just to kind of have conversations, you know, honest conversations, honest, supportive, non-judgmental conversations, so that somebody feels like, especially a friend, that you are available to them to reveal what's really going on. Now, standard, right, is you might find unprompted crying episodes. That means, you know, everything seems fine, but the person's bursting in tears and doesn't necessarily know why. You might find a person to be kind of far more irritable than they'd normally be, or really much more sensitive to things than they'd normally be. There's, you know, extremely low energy, low motivation. Things that maybe you guys used to enjoy together, they just kind of can't really get any pleasure from. Sometimes instead of seeing kind of a lot of crying, you'll also find that a person can be equally just kind of numb and detached. Mm-hmm. There can be a sense of impending doom, which is kind of like there's a sense that something is going to go wrong, because at this point, things kind of always do. There's like a shift in the lens through which somebody kind of views the world, for lack of a better way to put it, so that it's almost like the glasses they have on are suddenly really, really kind of fogged over with a sense of hopelessness and helplessness and despair and lack of worth. You know, those things will be kind of signs of depression, but it's more pervasive and more severe than kind of this thing happened and I'm really sad, right? Like that's normal. When you look at kind of mental health issues, what happens is you move from a normal response of, say, for example, sadness, like let's say a breakup, to something that actually causes impairment. This person's not performing at their job the way that they did before, or they can't concentrate enough to, like, you know, study for their exams, or even go to class, for example, right? There's a there's an impairment, a shift in the way that a person is able to kind of function.
And on your website, you say self-discovery and growth with empathy.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
I think a traditional kind of view of therapy is that someone's sitting there kind of either being really quiet, right, and saying, or kind of beating into you what you need to be doing. And it's neither. It's you know, you're the expert in what your experience has been. And while I'm there to kind of support and maybe possibly guide some conversations, it really is a space for you to be able to go, oh, man, I hadn't quite seen that, you know, about myself maybe in that way, or that was something that I hadn't perceived was impacting me in that way. And so when a space is one that is filled with empathy and without judgment, then a person can feel free to kind of look at things that maybe have been troubling them, or you know, engage in the possibility of shifting the way that they've been moving if it no longer serves them, for example. And so as long as there's empathy, the self-discovery has a place to land.
Okay.
And I think that's what kind of can allow for growth rather than having to cling to being one way, you know, or being kind of rigid around what we feel. It's not a quick process, but it's a good one. And, you know, it's not always so serious. I can't tell you the amount of times and sessions where my clients and I will be cracking up about something, you know, just because it also can be interesting to learn things about ourselves that maybe we kind of weren't aware of.
You have some tips on managing depression. You say establish a flexible routine. Tell us about your thoughts on that.
So the initial idea is kind of like have a routine. And if you have a routine, that way you'll know you at least do kind of the basics that are very hard to do when you're experiencing a depression. It's like the last thing that you want to do is engage in self-care. You know, it's harder to shower. It's harder to exercise. It's harder to kind of, you know, eat foods that will be beneficial for your body, right? It's harder to sleep. And so I think it's important that the routine is flexible, because when you find something that you think might help you cope, let's say writing in your journal, for example, you know, and the first week you do that, you are feeling a little bit better. There's a release. It's like, yes, this is going to be the thing that saves me. And then like the second week in, you know, your journaling practice is kind of falling flat. You still feel really down. It's not working. And so instead of kind of being discouraged by it not working, the idea would be, oh, okay, well, what else is there? You know, do I need to call my friend? If normally I do Pilates, do I need to do some sort of high impact aerobics class? Because maybe I just need to kind of switch it up. You know, we don't think about it in that way. If I go to have my coffee in the morning and I'm like, that's not really hitting the spot, I would just move on and grab some tea. And so in mental health, I think we also have to be flexible around the ways in which we cope.
And then you say find comfort in small pleasures like dancing to music and bringing back good memories, engaging activities, and laughter. Laughter. I love to laugh.
Oh, it's huge. It just kind of releases something inside of us. You know, when I worked at the community mental health clinic, one of the things that was hard to see is people who would share that they just didn't even remember the sound of their own laugh because it had been that long since they had felt any kind of lightness, right? Since they had felt attached to anything. And so to get to the point of working with someone where they recognize a smile on their face again, right? Seems minimal, but can be huge in terms of just recovery. But sometimes, you know, you can't access a lot of things. And so you know, somebody comes along with their little puppy, you know, and you play with the puppy and that reminds you that softness kind of still exists, you know?
Yeah, and then also my therapist that I was seeing at the time, she was saying to me, watch a comedy, a 30-minute comedy, or go to a movie that makes you laugh or something.
Yeah. It's interesting. I don't know what you think about. I think about breakups, and you know how you first have the breakup and you don't put on like the song that makes you feel good about how, you know, you're better off without the person or whatever, right? Like you put on like the Luther Vandross or the, you know, you put on that that song where you're still really longing and you're heartbroken and you're like, oh, I'll never feel better again. And then eventually you're like, wait a minute, what? You know, then you throw on your Prince and you're like, but it's a, right. But like, it's a process. And it's funny, like, a similar thing can happen with depression sometimes where we aren't ready for the laughter because it almost feels kind of, off-putting for our system. And so it's okay if we have to sit for a little bit in the feeling, but then I think pivoting is so important, right? To bring back in, yes, go see a comedy, you know, put on that upbeat music, do the things that remind us that joy exists despite how we're feeling right now.
Yeah, and then you say volunteer, build a support network.
You know, volunteering, it's that tricky thing where you say the word volunteer and people kind of think, oh, yes, I'll feel better about myself because I'm helping others. I don't mean it in that way. There's something about volunteering that takes you out of your head. I think when you interact with others, it reminds you that you're not the only one experiencing something. You know, it reminds you that we're part of this kind of universe and that everybody has a story of some sort. And so it can be really helpful in giving us a perspective that sometimes can be lost when we're really struggling with the depression.
Okay. And then finally, you say, grant yourself grace.
Oh, now, Janet, that's a big one because what so often happens is we're already struggling. And then, you know, instead of saying, oh God, you know you're struggling right now and this is awful. You know, things will be better. Instead of that, we tend to go, God, what's wrong with me? Oh, there's so much criticism, right? That we meet our depression with or whatever it is that we're experiencing. Because we're not kind of prepared to allow ourselves to be human. You know, we're having these experiences and it's like, what's wrong with you that you can't do X, Y, Z? Well, what's wrong is you're experiencing depression. And so when we kind of meet what we're experiencing with harsh words, essentially we're like, oh, hey, wound, you know, here's some salt. We're doubling down on our pain and meet ourselves with kindness around what we're dealing with. Now, that's not to say 2 weeks in, we're like, oh, well, I can only do this and sit here, right? Even that is time limited. But even if all we're doing is speaking kindly enough to ourselves to encourage ourselves to take that next step, it's still necessary that we use grace around that. And it's interesting that we have such a hard time doing for ourselves that we would do quite naturally for any of our loved ones or our friends, you know? So sometimes you almost have to talk to yourself the way that you would talk to a friend.
Yes. Yes. I take a spa day sometimes.
Ooh, that's lovely.
I have friends that are going through something, then we encourage each other. Oh, let's have a spa day together or something.
Yeah.
It's maybe momentarily, but it's something that definitely makes you feel good. What do you do for yourself? Because you have to listen to everyone's problems all day long. So. How do you unwind?
Well, multiple things. Before I get into that, really quickly, you mentioned spa day and how even though that's momentary, and I just wanted to say, even when things are momentary, they're really important because when you're faced with a depression, it's so important to have those moments to kind of hold on to. They're the things that allow us to feel hopeful in an otherwise very hopeless kind of feeling. And so for myself, oh my goodness, I grab my vinyl, turn on the music, I'll try to kind of exercise. Maybe there's a new recipe I haven't tried before, so I'll do something different in that way. I might need to consult with a therapist friend of mine just to kind of, because that's a safe and confidential space, to talk through some things, right? And then I think it's really important. Really, all therapists should have therapists.
I see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but because your role, while it's not that of kind of like a girlfriend, like, oh yeah, girl, I hear you, that's hard, right? Like, that's not your role, or the person could just talk to a friend. By the same token, you can't sit and listen without feeling deeply what the other person is experiencing. And so while you have to remain objective, you don't do it by not feeling the person's pain or hurt. And so I think it's really important to kind of have those restorative practices as well as your own therapist.
All right. Well, give us your social handles before we close out.
Sure. At Chris Violet, which is ChrysViolet, or at Space4Healing_. Chris Violet is a bit more casual because there's always something kind of therapeutic in it, but there's also a lot of kind of art on that page, et cetera. Space4Healing_ is really geared more towards kind of, daily tips. What is depression? More straightforward mental health.
Thank you. And do you have any last words before we close out?
I always have words because I tend to be rather chatty, but I would say if you are kind of hesitating, you're not quite ready to engage in therapy, that's okay, but don't allow it to prevent you from seeking support in some kind of way, right? Whether it's helpful readings, helpful podcasts, guided meditations that only last for a few minutes at the time. That's wonderful for getting out of your head or beginning to do the things that you know will be healing for you in the meantime are key. And, it doesn't hurt to have a consultation. You still have a decision to make after that. It doesn't mean you're forcing yourself into something you're not ready for.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris Violet.
Well, thank you, Miss Janice Shields Scott. It's going to be my goal to be hot every day.
I know that's right.
Take care. Okay. Thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Let's take a moment to relax. Take a deep breath. Inhale. And exhale. Again, inhale. And exhale. One more inhale. And exhale. As you go throughout the day, stop, take a pause, chill, and relax. Please keep in mind that all things which are impossible with man are possible with God.
You've been listening to What's Hot with Janet Shields Scott Podcast, a division of Janet the Beauty Style, your lifestyle guide to fitness, beauty, fashion, wellness, real estate, and entertainment. You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for more exciting information. Log on to JanetTheBeautyStyle.com.